Hey there, folks. John Scalzi here. How are you? I had my big fancy microphone hooked up because I was doing an afterword for the audiobook version of Red Shirts, which was narrated by Wil Wheaton, who did a fantastic job, by the way, because I got to listen to it and it's great. And I figured as long as I had my microphone hooked up, I would do a spontaneous podcast. So welcome to John Scalzi's Spontaneous Podcast. I trolled Twitter to get some questions to answer, and now I'm going to answer those questions. Not all of them, because I don't want this to go on too long, but some of them. So let's go with the first question. First question is from Joe Biernick, who asks, have I ever turned down a freelance gig due to ethical objections to a company's product or behavior? The answer is no, not because I'm a hack who will write anything for any horrible person, but simply that I haven't had a company that has that I have moral or product objections to ask me to do freelance work for them. If they did, I would probably turn them down because at this point in time, I don't need to worry about where my next meal is coming from. If I were starving, I don't know whether or not my ethics would be more flexible or not. I'm assuming they wouldn't be, but that's because I think well of myself. But at the moment, the answer is definitely no. So Eric A. Meyer asks, why was there never a paperback edition of The God Engines? Well, in fact, there was a paperback edition of The God Engines, but it was published in France. So I don't know that does you any good there, Mr. Meyer. The reason that there was not an English language paperback version of The God Engines is basically because it doesn't make any economic sense to do so. The hardcover edition did actually very well. But when it came time to doing a sort of mass market version, seemed the smart way to do it was actually just to go straight to the electronic version and do it that way. Now, there might be at some point in the future I will take the God Engines and combine it with something else or like put it in a short story collection or something like that, in which case there would ultimately be a paperback edition here in the United States. But at the moment, I don't really think that there's a market for it. And I don't think Subterranean Press, who's the publisher, thinks that there's a market for it. It's selling perfectly well in the electronic edition. So, I think that in this case, that's the correct evolutionary path for it, to go into hardcover and then go into electronic. So I wouldn't wait up nights for the English language paperback edition of God Engines. Sorry about that. Matt Phelps asks, I loved Fuzzy Nation. Will we be getting any more retellings of H. Beam Piper classics? Possibly, but not from me. I mean, I did it because it was an interesting experiment for me to see what it would be like to take a classic golden age science fiction story and sort of contemporize it. And now that I know what it looks like, I don't really have any particular interest in going back and doing anybody else's stuff. I mean, H. Beam Piper was a good one to do because so much of his stuff is in the public domain. And frankly, if somebody else wanted to do it because it's in the public domain, I don't see how anybody could stop them. So if someone else wants to do it, it's fine. Now, I may or may not make a sequel to Fuzzy Nation, but if I do it, obviously it's based off primarily at this point, it will be based off the work that I've done rather than going back to any of the work that H. Beam Piper did. So the short answer to this is no, not for me. The long answer is if somebody else does them, then yes, you will. So, but that's, again, that's not up to me. I'm not other people. Let's see. Lisa Moore asks, have you ever had anybody tell you that your story is crap because it's scientifically impossible and then try to argue with you about it? No, thank God. I mean, I had this thing where I made an error in the Ghost Brigades about calling an orbit a parabolic orbit, which it wasn't supposed to be, and people corrected me about that. The problem with it is that I knew that it wasn't correct, and I, you know, kept saying to, you know, the publishers, let's fix this, let's fix this, let's fix this, and it kept not getting fixed. It's finally fixed. If you look at the most recent editions of the Ghost Brigades, they've snipped out the word parabolic, which is nice. But people don't argue with me about it simply because I told them, yes, I know it's a mistake. It's my mistake, and you know we're hopefully fixing it in later editions. And I mean, what can you argue about? on that particular case. So, fortunately, I mean, I don't tend to do a whole lot of science that is so detailed that there is a lot of room to argue about little specific details. And that's kind of intentional. I kind of know the limits of my scientific knowledge, and I try not to get myself out on a limb about that. But people are going to argue about what they're going to argue about. And the usual way that I deal with that is going, okay, thanks, as opposed to arguing with them going, no, because if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. You know, get over it for me. John Pitzel wants to know, what fashion tips do I wish Mary to take into account when she provides me with Worldcon wear? The background story on this particular thing is that I made a joke to Mary Robinette Kowal about wearing a Regency dress, because she has Regency dresses, because that's her thing. And then, of course, we had this discussion on Twitter, so everybody else who was watching us have this discussion was like, oh, look, he's going to wear a dress. Oh, boy. And so now, apparently, the understanding is I'm going to be wearing a dress to the Worldcon. I'm not saying I'm going to wear a Regency dress to Worldcon, but if I did, I think what I would like for Mary to take into consideration is that I'm slowly devolving into the middle-aged white man pear shape. And so if she makes a dress for me, I really don't want to look hippie. You know, I want it to be sort of slimming and look good on me. So that would be my only request for her with the Regency dresses, to do it in such a way that, you know, my ass doesn't look like it's just hanging out there. But, frankly, we'll just have to see what happens with the Worldcon. I'm not making any promises, but I don't think I would look that bad in a dress. Let's see. Jarrett Rush wants to know, the best Journey song no one really knows. What is my favorite deep cut? Well, let's see. Actually, I have a couple of them. There's a song, I think it's off Departure, called Good Morning Girl, which dovetails into a song called Stay a While. So, and if you listen to the Departure album, which I believe is their live album, they actually have the two of them sort of fading into each other. And I think both of those are very pretty, and they're very listenable and stuff like that. I wouldn't necessarily call them deep, but they were pretty good. And then off of Trial by Fire, which was the last album they did with Steve Perry, there's a song called If She Should Break Your Heart, or If He Should Break Your Heart, excuse me, which I quite like. And in both of those cases, they're not exactly, they're not like deep and complex songs. I mean, this is Journey during their very popular period, as opposed to their first like two or three albums before they had Steve Perry, where they were just doing weird sort of Santana-ish jams. But, I'm a sucker for a good pop song, and those are some good pop songs. So. Cole Wardell wants to know, have I ever had story ideas that were too outrageous for a book? I wrote a chapter where someone farted someone else to death. I don't think that having outrageous ideas is a problem for me. That said, there are some ideas that I had that weren't necessarily too outrageous, but they were ones that I was like, okay, how do I actually present these? So in terms of, excuse me, in terms of actually doing things that are complex and I actually need to think about, there are some that I have not addressed yet, because they're basically still running around in my head as what's the best way to make this happen. So, outrageous, no. Complex and tricky, yes. I haven't done some of those yet, and maybe at some point they will be ready to come out. And when they do, hopefully they will be cool. I mean, like God Engines was a good example of that. I thought about it for 2 or 3 years before I actually started writing it. My cat Fluffy asks, what does the bottom of the neighbor's swimming pool smell like? If you don't know, there's still time to check. This is the Twitter feed of Fluffy, who is not necessarily actually Fluffy my cat. And no, I don't actually write Fluffy the cat's Twitter feed. So it's one of those crazy, crazy things. However, Fluffy knows as well as anybody else that none of the neighbors have pools. However, the neighbors do have ponds, which are which are ponds, and I don't know what they smell like. Frankly, I don't go near the ponds because that would be trespassing and that would be wrong. D. Paul Angel asks, do you consider yourself an introvert or extrovert, and what are the pros and cons of it with your work? I actually wrote a entry about this on whatever. You can go into the search engine and look for it. I basically consider myself to be a very socially well-adapted introvert, which means that I can socialize and hang out with people and have a good time and do all that sort of stuff. And it looks like I'm an extrovert, but extroverts get energized by being around people. And ultimately, I find people draining to be around. Like I've said before, it's a slow leak, but eventually it happens. And when it happens, I basically just like, okay, now you all have to go away. Everybody else doesn't go away. What ends up is me going away, and I spend a few hours just sitting in a room going, I don't think it really has pros or cons with the work, because, like I said, the issue is not being an introvert or an extrovert. The issue is actually, are you socialized or are you unsocialized? And if you are unsocialized, being an unsocialized extrovert is probably a very bad thing. But being a socialized introvert and being able to handle people and deal with them and make them feel like, you know, you're glad to be spending time with them, it's not really a problem at all. So socialization, I'm for it. Please do try it whenever you can. Justin Carmoni, is there a clinical diagnosis to explain why you are so you? No, I'm actually pretty sane. When I was a kid, my parents were going through divorce. They put me through therapy just as a sort of preventative measure. But I think nothing, you know, came out of that. They didn't lock me away. Generally speaking, nope. I'm just me because I'm me. There's no medical reason for it at all. Jay Lake, what color shirt are you wearing today? And if it's not red, why not? My shirt I'm wearing today is my Pac-Man shirt, and it's black. And it's not red because whoever made it is didn't make it in red. And I don't typically wear red shirts because I have very few red shirts. I have like two or three of them. And like the vast majority of my t-shirts, because I'm a geek and black is the color of the National Geek t-shirt, I have a lot of black t-shirts. There is the actual red shirt from Red Shirts that Tor has made, and which I have one, but my wife actually wears that more often than I do because it has my name on it. And just like if you're in a band, you can't actually wear your own band t-shirt, because that's just, I mean, seriously, what is that? The same reason, if you're a nerd, you can't actually wear the t-shirt that has your name on it. So like every time I go to a convention and I'm a guest of honor and they put my name on the t-shirt, my wife wears the t-shirt, but I can't wear the t-shirt because wearing your own name on the t-shirt's just weird. Minicon had a t-shirt that actually had my head in a jar on a t-shirt. And I actually accidentally put it on once and then looked in the mirror and went, ah, it was a little more than I wanted. So the short answer to this is not often wearing red. And let's see. Do the Hugo Awards, Mark Siegel asks, do Hugo rules prevent a novel-length fanfic from winning best novel? No. Actually, as far as I know, as long as it's actually a novel that was published in English and is novel length, which is more than 40,000 words, it doesn't matter what the topic is. If it gets enough nominations and it's science fiction and fantasy, then it's eligible for best novel. So technically speaking, there's no reason why a fanfic novel could not be nominated for a Hugo. But, you know, this is the same reason why, you know, technically speaking, your, videotape of, or, you know, a Super 8 of your 8th birthday, if it went on for a long enough period of time and was exhibited in a certain number of theaters, it wouldn't, you know, it would be technically eligible for the best, Best Film Oscar, but it's not going to win, you know. So generally speaking, I don't think we have to worry too much about fanfic being nominated for Best Novel, if worrying is the actual word for that. It just seems unlikely that it's going to happen. Let's see. Someone wants to know what the nature of consciousness is. Lily Hunter. I don't know. Why ask me this? I don't know. I know I'm conscious. I'm aware of I'm thinking. I don't know how it works. I'm just glad it does. And Eric Renberg, when did you first start writing? Before kindergarten? But that's probably not the actual answer you're thinking of. I really started writing in terms of fiction and short stories and all that sort of stuff my freshman year in high school. I have actually over here in my cubby, I have a whole chunk of my high school stories that I wrote. And of course, they're terrible because that's just, you know, the way so much high school writing is. But, you know, for a 14-year-old, they weren't so bad, and that's a good thing. But, yeah, no, I first got serious writing freshman in high school, so it worked out very well. And you know what? I think that that's pretty much all the time that we have for questions right now. That's about a 20-minute podcast. I think that's a good length, don't you? Thank you, everybody who sent in questions for Twitter, and thank you for everybody who is listening. And to the person who inevitably says, I thought your voice would be lower.
Here, how does that sound? Thank you. Thank you very much.
I'll talk to you all later. Bye-bye.